are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations,
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
2-1-0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Shazia's Mad Science. I got my buddy Dieden on here, my fellow mad scientist. How you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good.
Cool. You know, I got my thumbs downer. He's back. He come on there and thumbed down my video. Didn't even, nobody ever tells me why they hate my stuff, you know. I wish they would, because that's all right. You know, some jive turkey out there tried to put the atomic boot to the ass of Shaziz Radio, and of course they didn't succeed because we're still broadcasting, guys. You know what I'm saying? You know,
yeah.
They did a lot of damage just go around, but it's all right. We'll get back up on that deal. I'll tell you that, because You know, you can't keep a good man or a good idea down, brother.
Huh. You got a heavy attack or something?
Oh, yeah. I got 180-some-odd viruses on my personal server that now I can't even use until I get that sucker straightened out. 9 virtual servers went down. They jacked with my radio player on my deal here. And I don't know how they managed that one, but I got it back fired back up. And so now if you happen to be on the Knights of the Round Table page, you'll notice there's 2 players there. So if one goes down, don't stress. Just go down underneath the chat room down there and push on the little arrow button on the Shazoo's radio player there and fire it back up, you know, because I'm putting backup plans for backup plans for backup plans because these knuckleheads out there, they just won't give up, man.
Yeah.
You know, we would talk about hydrogen, and we talk about running your cars on hydrogen, and everybody look at us cross-eyed like we're stupid and stuff, but now the Navy's implementing a deal where they're going to be running their ships on hydrogen. They're going to be dragging the fuel up out of the ocean as they go.
are they using it as their conversion RF and stuff like that?
They're not saying, but they said that they're going to. And this is what kicked me about how they actually said it. They were going to have commercial version ready. And so commercial version tells me that they're going to fix it on trying to sell that to people.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, first they say, oh, no, you can't do that. You know, it's not going to, it costs too much. And then even went as far as to try to say it costs $3 a gallon for fuel, you know.
Yeah, because of the process of conversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hock a hooey, man. One sec.
Yeah, well, it's only a matter of time before we make a transition from selling fossil fuels to selling water.
They even went as far as to say they don't even have to modify their ships because the older ships were old steam turbines, and these newer ones are gas turbines. And so the way that they're doing it, they don't even have to modify their ships. All they have to do is put this equipment on there and basically start pumping water out of the ocean, and it's already got salt in it, so you don't have to worry about putting anything else with that. You know, it's already got
electrolyte.
Yeah, there you go. That's the word I was looking for.
That's at least it's green. At least it'll be green while they're going around blowing people up.
Well, yeah, that's pretty nice of them. You know, save the planet while you blow up the other side.
Yeah.
Oh man,
well,
you know
they have the resource and the means to make those things, whereas the average everyday Joe or you know the startup companies, they don't have the same type of resources. They don't have an endless pool of financial resource or material resource. So
yeah, well, I'm thinking we need to cut up their credit card, man. We're paying the bill. You know,
yeah.
take a big pair of scissors and get on that government credit card. You know, it's going to take all of us to hold that scissors because it's going to have to be a big one for their credit card because that thing keeps growing, man.
Well, before you can cut down a tree, you got to have a plan of what you're going to use it for, right? So
yeah,
that should be the first part is the plan. What's the plan of action going to be? So.
I personally think that they're using Stan Meyer's technology to do what they're doing, going to be doing on their ships. You know,
that combination of RF and
But hey, you know, they said it couldn't be done, and now they're talking about doing it. So you know, okay, all right.
Well, I'm sure they've been doing it for 20-30 years. They just are now coming out and saying they're doing it.
Well, brother, I talked to some old farmers, and we talked about days during the Depression and stuff like that, and you know, when they grew up with their grandfathers and fathers back in the day, whenever money was like really super tight and everything, and they were telling me that they used to take, when they got the tractors up to operating temperature, they would inject water right into the cylinder and burn water. And
yeah.
So, you know, they were saving fuel, money on fuel back then.
Yeah, I've heard of that too, and just using some steam energy inside of the...
Yeah, because there's several ways to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. You know, you could use the brute force, or you could use the heat, you know, radio frequencies. But, you know, it's just, it's crazy to me, because here we are sitting here talking about it, and we've been talking about this for God knows how long, about doing it, and the military and everybody else look at everybody cross-eyed, you know, because you got to sell the oil, man. We got to get over there, and we got to get control of the oil, because, you know, somebody might run out of oil.
Well, it's his vested interest in the idea of privilege and hierarchy and control. You know, that's kind of what the human species has been operating on for so long. But I think we're slowly turning around and we're realizing that we have a magnificent potential. But it's just a matter of recognizing our place in the universe.
You know? Yeah, but it makes me mad because we should be so much further advanced, and if it wasn't for these knuckleheads dragging their feet, you know, it's kind of like, if you take a look at the mainstream media out there, they've been lying and propagandizing for so freaking long that eventually they got people to the point where they don't even believe nothing the media says, and so their lack of trust also brought them into a lack of ratings, and so their ratings suck so bad. I mean, our ratings are better than their ratings. You know, we're in the alternative media, and
well, it's more than just the media, though. Too, it's the mainstream sciences as well. It's like the idea of critical thinking is thrown aside because of the funding, and you know, you can't do a science, you can't explore possibility in science if it doesn't have funding, and if it doesn't make money, then they're not going to put money into it.
So, yeah, I wasn't going to leave them out either. I was going to get on their back, and I was going to get on the military's back, because all of these turkeys are part of the problem, because, you know, like the mainstream scientist guys like you're talking about. Now, I know they've done the research. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They've done the research. Even the research they say that they don't do, they do the research. Otherwise, they wouldn't be as advanced as what they are. But what they're telling us is two different things. Like the whole global warming debacle, it makes me so freaking mad. I mean, it just drives me insane, because just when you think it's all died down and everybody's finally got a bit of common sense, they come back and not only change the name of global warming to climate change, which one can't really argue with climate change because... You know,
change is a constant in the universe.
Yeah, I was in the Philippines one time, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky, brother. And 5 minutes later, it was pouring down like cats and dogs, and it came like a bucket and just dumped on you. And then next thing you know, the sun's out again. So the climate change turns at the drop of the hat, you know.
climate extremes, maybe.
Yeah,
that would be a decent statement, I guess.
Well, you know, if
becoming more extreme. I mean, maybe you could say that, but
if climate change doesn't work out, they'll find a new catchphrase, because, you know, it's this thing going on down here in Texas right now. They're going to save the turtles and mop this farmer's cattle, you know. There's all kinds of crazy crap going on, man. You know, you're going to go through there, save turtles while you mop all the cows? Or where's the animal rights people in this process? They're chasing these cattle around with helicopters. Now, if you're a cow, first off, you're probably out of shape because you're fat.
they've been designed that way over you know, hundreds of years of breeding.
But
us breeding.
How many miles can you run cows before they drop of a heart attack? You know.
Well, there's the solution. That's what they came up with, right?
Yeah. But either way, well,
as far as that goes, I mean, the cattle are not necessarily native, so to relocate them, I think, is probably a good idea. But yeah, to just kill them is probably not
the whole thing that I'm trying to get at is that, you know, man, I like saving the planet, all right, but I know that this planet is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. The creator of this planet made this planet such that it will take care of itself, because obviously if you're intelligent enough to create something so complex, then you know that you're going to put some men and women down here that probably aren't going to necessarily make the best decisions and choices. If it weren't for some sort of outer force that had created this thing to take care of itself, clean itself up, then we'd have whacked ourselves so long ago that, you know, we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now.
Maybe we already have in the past.
We probably have. But if you go out there and you mow your grass once a week, then you got a nice looking yard. But if you don't mow your grass for a couple weeks, you know, then the grass gets real tall, and you don't mow it for a couple months, the grass gets pretty high, and then after about 6 months, you got trees growing up in your yard, and about a year later, you're sitting out in the middle of the freaking jungle wondering why the skeeters are on your neck. All right? So Mother Nature takes back what we don't use. Now, there's a lot of crap floating around out there in the ocean that we should go out there and get and recycle, you know.
Yeah,
but we don't. We're wasteful. And so with that
said...
Where's the
money in that? There's no money in it.
Oh, there's plenty of money in that. There's over there in Europe, they were taking plastic and making gasoline out of it.
And what was the byproduct of that process?
Well, hard telling, man. But, you know, what... my point is this... There is not one thing that we've created that nature can't deteriorate. They said plastic would last in the dumps for thousands of years. That's a crock, man, because I go out metal detecting all the time. I find sandwich bags that are so deteriorated, when you pick them up, they'll just, like, fall apart, you know. And old aluminum will start turning white, like I think of the chemicals, calcium carbonate, where aluminum naturally comes from, but... It all deteriorates. You know, you ever seen that movie 500 Years After Man, that show that's on TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, 500.
That's a wonderful description, yeah. Yeah, about the all of our man-made structures and how... What do they say would last the longest? Oh, what's already been made, the pyramids would probably last the longest.
Yeah, but see, the key in the pyramids, well, they were made with local materials that, you know...
Right. Well, they're made using what nature has already designed.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
So,
like, and for example, asymmetrical design, if you look at trees and stuff like that, they're basically built on that fundamental principle that they have you know, triangle shape and ellipses.
Yeah.
Interweaving.
I mean, if you look at the mountains have been around there for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
There's something to the way that a mountain's designed. You know, it's got a huge base and a small top, you know, so it kind of looks like a pyramid.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand all the stupidity that goes on. We should, I remember when I was a kid, I was thinking, you know, by the year 2000, we're going to be flying around in cars, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be like the Jetsons.
I thought that too.
And we should be.
Yeah. Well.
We got the technology. We got the technology to do.
We don't have the spiritual base. We don't have that foundation. I personally believe we're missing the coming of age of humanity, of going in from an adolescent into an adult, and that is understanding our place in the universe and our connection and how we can't dominate to continue on. We have to understand.
Well, the Indians realized way back in the day that they had to coincide with nature, you know, in order, you know, and they even whenever they went out hunting, they would respect, you know, whatever it was that they, you know, took and be thankful for the food or whatever, you know. And, you know, you can learn a lot from people like that. You can learn a lot from the Amish. I mean, look at the Amish, man. They're doing all right. I mean, they got their own sawmills and do all kinds of stuff out there. You know, that's a simple life. I mean, I'm not saying we all got to go back and live in grass huts. I'm not. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to wake up in the morning with a tick on my neck.
We can improve on the grass huts, though. I mean,
yeah.
On what's already been, that's already worked for hundreds or thousands of years, instead of all of a sudden in the last 60 years come up with something that's
we could build.
You know, it's okay to come up with something that's brand new, but when that thing that's brand new is main motive is to get people more material things, then there's a perversion of itself. It becomes a, like, perverted of itself. You know,
yeah,
it's mutant.
We could build build houses that wouldn't fall down. We could build floodproof, hurricane, tornado, typhoon, you know, you name it, earthquake-proof houses. We got all the technology, but what do we? We still build them on sticks and bricks. You know, what a waste.
Yeah, concrete foundation with a with lumber, and then tons of chemical processes,
yeah.
You know, like paints and all kinds of chemical stuff, you know,
just to sell. I said it a lot. We're like goldfish in a bowl, man. You know, we pee and poo in our own water and pollute our own local environment. You know, in the long term, nature's gonna, you know, if it doesn't like us, it's gonna shake us off like a bad set of fleas. But you know, if you learn from nature, and you can tap into the energy that's all around us. That's why I keep saying I'm going to prove 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt that energy's free. Of course, in order to do that, I've got to come up with a really nifty device that people can actually see. You know, some of them want to call it over unity, some of them want to call it zero energy or whatever, perpetual motion. You know, look out there at this world, man. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking for it. Period.
Comes from within first.
Oh, we build all of our appliances so inefficient that they're just, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And
personally, I think...
Now that they've upgraded to Energy Star now, I think they're getting a little more efficient, right?
Yeah, but even those things are crap.
Well, you got to implement it slowly. You can't just make it the best all at once, otherwise you're not going to make any money off of it.
They had a light bulb over in, doggone, I think it was either England, somewhere over in Europe, they had a light bulb over there that would last freaking 10, 11 years.
Yeah. Well, all right. So we have it now. It's a LED light bulb will last a long time, so long as you don't, you know.
When the cheapo elements burn out of your fluorescent bulbs, those fluorescent bulbs will still light up. You can see proof of that because every time you watch one of my videos, you see one of them fluorescent bulbs lighting up.
Yeah, sighting the mercury vapors.
Yeah, as long as you don't break that seal, that vacuum on there, that bulb will last forever. And all you got to do is hit it with the high voltage. You know, you can do it with static. You know, run around on, rub your feet on the carpet and touch the deal. You know, so. There's a light bulb right there. Whenever people throw them in the trash, I go get them because to me they're like gold. You know, if the power grid ever goes down, you know, all I got to do, you know, is fire up a little oil burner igniter. I can light my entire house up with one 12-volt car battery. You know, throw a little solar panel on there to charge that car battery, and I got enough lighting for my entire house.
Yeah. Well, it's everything has capacitance, and there's.
Well, speaking of that, your video, some fascinating stuff going on there. I was impressed with it. That even after you shut the power off of the main coil that you was using to energize it, you were still getting those pulses out of that.
Yeah, for quite a while, with that particular setup with the lead scalding wrapping around it, the magnetic field on the outside of the dielectric, for some reason it lasts lot longer than it should. Now I'm posting another video for some initial conclusions is what the video is called, and it's basically delving into kind of mainstream science. It's probably a little taboo, but I'm a fringe scientist anyways, right? So what do I care? But it's talking about the creation of lightning on our planet. And what's your take on that?
Well, you know, like I said, we live in an electric universe. We live in an electrical world. The Earth is a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. We've got ice crystals and things in our atmosphere that whenever they're smashing together, build up a static charge like rubbing your feet on the carpet. When that positive charge in the atmosphere gets high enough, and it can actually break down the air in between there and shorten the spark gap, then bow, you got lightning. You know, drags the negative electrons out of the earth, and the lightning comes from the ground up to the atmosphere, and you got a big, huge discharge with a nifty old crack of thunder after. You know.
Well, why? That's what mainstream science initially believes too, is that it's collisions of ice crystals and cloud formations, and I think we're kind of missing the fundamental source of that, and that is the high and low pressure. How is the high and low pressure created?
Oh yeah, well I'm not disagreeing with you. That's another one of the deal. I mean, think about it for a second. We are spinning at 1,000 miles an hour on our axis, so there's a lot of friction built up in the atmosphere from all that.
Yeah. Yep, there's another factor that needs to definitely be equated. I think the ice crystal phenomenon, I think, is probably the lowest of all the factors that are affecting us. But think about this. What about the sun? The sun's interaction with us.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another reason why I like plasma. Because,
and,
you know...
And that's what my video is basically all about, is kind of explanation of lightning, a very easy explanation of lightning.
When those rays from the sun are coming down, if you could actually see what's going on, you know, you got hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen in the air, and when that doggone sun ray comes down there and bombards them molecules, you get a lot of action going on, man, and so it's charging up, man, just like a capacitor, just like what your video did.
And that's why I'm putting this video out, because it kind of, and honestly, to tell you the truth, I think that this has probably already been explored in plasma physics, and actually I've seen documentation of the same exact experiment of just grounding the plasma ball and hitting it with some type of high voltage, right?
Yeah.
And high potential. And then the plasma ball carrying capacitance and then discharging when there's an air breakdown, like just like you said before. And I'm kind of confused why it's not in the mainstream, because if I've done it, you know, somebody else with millions of dollars to throw out of it has done it. But yet our common model is that ice crystals, it's localized. It has nothing to do with our outer bodies. Localized, so ice crystals form in clouds, create friction, and make lightning. That's the accepted.
I would say that's just one of many factors that plays in there. I'm saying there's a whole lot more to it. The sun plays to me the biggest portion of the whole deal. I know that ice crystals do, because you ever heard of snow thunder?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting discharges up there. That's one thing about this. All over this planet, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and in some places, you can see lightning every day all year long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so electrically charged. And so, people say there ain't no free energy, Well, seriously?
The sun's a great example. It beams.
Yeah.
In 5 minutes' time, it beams enough energy down on us to power the Earth, for like 5 years.
I mean, I can plug.
Or 2 years, something like that.
I can plug a couple ground rods out there, one copper coated and one zinc ground rod out in the dirt outside, and I can get a small voltage just by doing that. So, if I can get.
About this, though, the voltage is not. May not be the greatest, the potential difference may not be the greatest part about the Earth. Maybe the wonder of the Earth is actually its magnetic field. It's geometry. It's the magnetic current, the thing that kind of binds all of the potential difference together. So.
Well, I'm agreeing with that. I could probably move my ground rods in a different. There's probably a better place to put it into to get more voltage up out of there. But the simple thing is, I just wanted to prove that there is continuous energy coming from the dirt.
Yeah. So I think most electrical engineers would agree, and radio, any type of radio engineer, radio operator. I mean, you make a crystal battery and. How are you getting the power for it? It's just from the ground.
Well,
the air.
I like the ground. If you noticed my videos, and I don't understand why I keep getting thumbs down on my videos. I mean, some of these folks out there, they're college-educated geeks, and they just pretty much believe that whatever they were told in school was the only possibilities, and they're just missing the blatantly obvious right before their very eyes. I don't know if you saw, I got a battery charger hooked to this one battery that I've been using for 2 years, and it should by rights be completely freaking dead by now, but it's connected to the ground.
Yeah.
It is connected right straight to the freaking dirt, man, and all I got All I got is one little tiny red wire that is my ground wire. So there's not a whole lot of electron flow that can actually go through there. It's like a fuse, so to speak. Now, if I'm getting that much power by using one little tiny ground wire, imagine what would happen if I brought a big old welding cable, multi-strand copper, you know, wire cable into here and use that for my ground. But there's no energy coming out of the dirt, man. And that's why you seem like every time you get your, if you take your high voltage and you put it down towards the ground, you'll see that it'll arc to the ground. Why is that?
Because it's recycling back into the greater magnetic field of things. It's like a magnet. Current, amperage and current itself are they create strong magnetic fields, right?
Yep.
So, think about that. Look at sound, for example. Sound is quite a powerful force. It can be, and it is a vibration of the waves, right? So, if you look at it, look at heat. Heat is another example. Heat is the same thing, a vibration in the wave of what is cold, the absence of heat.
Yep.
Well, that magnetic field is what I personally believe is what kind of facilitates that. Okay, there's a magnetic field, and it's like a crazy infinite geometry. It's really hard to kind of describe, but it would be, you know,
well, the
concentric circles inside of themselves, you know.
The simple way to describe it would be using water, you know. Yep. Nature finds its balance. I'm echoing back somewhere.
Let me turn this down a little bit, maybe.
Nature will... Echo. Hello. Yeah. Anyway, nature always finds its balance. That's why you can see a water level. They use water levels to level up trailers and stuff like that, because you put water in there, and whatever height you have it on one end, it will match the same height on the opposite end. So if it's 6 feet off the ground on one side, it will be 6 feet off the ground at the other side, and all you have to do to level that trailer out is to bring that trailer to match that line on that water level, and you'll get a perfect level every single time. And that's because the water molecules inside there, everything, you know, I'm telling you, gravity's magnetism, and I don't care who disagrees with me, whatever, but everything has its own magnetic field. Anything that has protons, neutrons, and electrons, and it has its own magnetic field, and by the strength of that particular field, you know, it's going to determine how heavy it is. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, that's a excellent theory, especially since gravity, or especially since magnetism. Gravity's been proven to be a force, but magnetism has yet to be completely, indisputably proven as where it is and what it is. It's the negative electricity and what would be the north pole, I guess, of gravity or of magnetism. Or they're still trying to delve into, and as far as in quantum physics and the Higgs boson, and they say they find it, and then they find another piece of it or another transitional form, and it goes through, and they say they find it, then it does it again. I almost think that it is the very transition that it exists. It's like trying to perceive someone else's consciousness. You're going to perceive someone else's thoughts. You're going to put your own spin on it, your own type of twist to it, right? Your own perspective. But the very act of perceiving is where the magic happens, I guess. I don't know. It's a difficult thing to wrap your mind around. It's pretty deep.
If we were non-magnetic at all, whatsoever, we were just completely non-magnetic. We had no kind of magnetic force around us whatsoever. No energy force. No electrical. You know, anytime you got electrons, protons, and neutrons, which make up every atom, you know, every molecule out there, then you have a magnetic field. If we had absolutely no magnetism to us whatsoever, we would literally fly off of this rock. Centrifugal force shows, you know, put water inside a bucket, you can spin it around in a circle and the water will stay in the bucket, you know. But you put water on the outside of the bucket and you try to spin it around a circle, it's going, whatever's on there is going to fling off because of centrifugal force. And since we're spinning at 1,000 miles an hour on our axis, we should fly off into space, but we don't.
Layers of the planet would go, and we would go, you know, because you have a lot of pressure on us from the atmosphere and stuff like that, but yeah.
And
yeah,
so we have, you know, kind of like if you take a balloon and you put a static charge, you'd rub that balloon on your head, you can pick up paper, man.
Yeah.
Because even paper has a small magnetic field to it, believe it or not.
Well, technically, everything has a magnetic field.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to get around.
Our field, luckily for us, is weak enough that we aren't flat as a pancake. You know, kind of like two neodymium magnets that are, you know, if you slam your fingers between those, it'll rip your finger off. You know, two big old giant heavy-duty neodymium magnets.
I don't know if it's that it's weak enough or it's just because of the intelligent design of the universe. It kind of this Earth, for that matter, we've slowly adapted to the changes that are prevalent to the Earth. You know what I mean? We come from the Earth, and so we've basically become attuned to the Earth's magnetic field. So it's not that it's necessarily weak to us. We're in that perfect balance, that threshold that makes it so it's not weak.
Well, if you look at dust. Just dust. Go around your house and look on an old light bulb or something or whatever, something that's hanging from the ceiling. You'll see that dust is sticking to that deal. And you, like, if you had something you could spin around that was full of dust, you can spin that around and that dust will stay there, you know. But if you take a real high pressure hose, you'll blow that dust off, you know. So if tornado comes by, we get sucked off the globe.
like a giant cosmic windstorm.
Yeah, but gravity pulls us back down. Yeah. You know, so whatever goes up got to come down. Who said that? Doggone it.
Well, I guess that'd be Newton.
Newton, yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying that we have a strong enough magnetic field that we actually stick to this planet, you know, like a dust to a lamp or whatever, but we don't have a strong enough magnetic field to where our gravity would be like, you know, on some planets out there must have a massive magnetic field if their gravity is like, you know, when you drop a tin can on there, it'll just flatten it instantaneously, you know.
And then there's also the density of the atmosphere and stuff like that, which essentially, it would be the creation of gravity through space, like it using almost like with like a plasma, like it's creating a plasma around the. And actually, look at our blood cells. That's another example. Our blood cells are swimming through plasma, and the plasma is still kind of not understood. It is. I mean, it's it's a fat carrier and water, you know, carrier. It's like a clear liquid, you know, but it's still not fully understood, and it's funny that they're both called plasma, you know,
So if we had helium in our, instead of blood, we'd float away and...
Well, according to our magnetic field, right? Yes,
yeah.
Because the sun has an attraction to helium and hydrogen. That's why they both go up 40 miles per hour, you know?
Yeah, great. Oh, it's going to get sucked into the sun now.
But hey, all that's happening is you're just getting recycled back to where you came from, man.
You know, earlier you said something about being like on the fringe science. I like the science guys that are outside the box because those are the ones who actually really ask the questions on how things work. To me, it's all simple on how things work. Things are mechanical in my head. That's how I do what it is that I'm doing. You know, this, I don't know if you've seen my latest video with this newest coil that I was, the only reason I made that video was to test that spark gap. And I don't even have that coil up to full potential, but it has its own built-in capacitors inside this thing, and it's a coil inside of a coil. And so if I run that like the traditional Tesla coil, you're getting a lightning bolt to the face.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. And
the Tesla coil in and of itself has capacitance, although it's, you know, it's pretty small.
Yeah, and the reason why you don't see none of my videos going around doing, you know, where you can actually see a corona coming off the top of the top load is because, you know, all that energy out there, while it does look cool, it's wasted energy. What I'm wanting to do is to capture that energy. If you notice that in that video, I was running off the negative pole of the battery and the dirt. That's the only power that thing was getting. You know, it wasn't it wasn't running straight off the igniter or anything. It was just the radiant energy that was coming off of that right there and the dirt itself, and that's the energy that I used to run my test. But you could see inside those two bulb starters, there was a massive amount of plasma in there. And if you can get your spark gap to literally turn white, you know there's a lot of power going through that. And I don't know if you've seen closer to the end of the video when I finally tuned it up real good on that one side, you could literally see that spark gap was white.
Yep.
So
that's a cool spark gap too, man. I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty simple to make. And they work really good, and the reason why I like them is because, you know, for one, it's got a visual where you can see the plasma. If you can see that plasma, you know you're getting a good arc across there.
Yeah.
And you can actually tune it, you know, like if I back it off to where I'm not actually getting a spark, when that capacitor layer finally charges up, when the capacitor finally charges up and breaks down the dielectric and then, you know, shoots across there, you'll get a real loud pop out of that thing. I did a video on my Shaziz coil a while back, and I got four spark gaps on my Shaziz coil, and you can tune these things just right, and as the capacitor is charging up and discharging, it's charging up from the ground, and then it'll fire back into the same platform that it's charging off of initially, and that thing isn't hooked up to anything but the ground. And it's just picking up the radiant energy off of
using a copper butt. Oh yeah, and you're powering it from your other Tesla coil.
Yeah.
Source. Yeah, yeah.
And so that one's completely unpowered, other than the dirt. You're coming out, you know, the ground rod down in there, and
probably could just do two dissimilar metals too, like the Earth battery. You probably didn't even need the negative on the battery.
Yeah.
No?
Well,
yeah.
The key to this particular one here is the cheapo stainless steel. There's certain metals that are really good conductors, of radiant energy, like aluminum. You know, I got that aluminum pyramid that hangs up over the top of my deal, and in some of my videos you can see where I put my finger on the little bulb starter, and you can literally see plasma inside that bulb. And that is not grounded at all. It's just hanging from a piece of hemp rope. But if you run your finger across the back of that edge of that aluminum, you can feel the arcs coming off of that thing. And so that energy, that aluminum and the pyramid shape make a perfect antenna.
Yeah, because you have your points for collecting the voltage, and then you have your surface area for capturing the waves, so to speak, the magnetic flux, or whatever you want to call it, the amperage, the current.
Well, I'm a firm believer that plasma is the way to go. I put a couple designs, some crude pictures up here somewhere on the site. I can't remember. I think it's in the in the doggone virtual labs. I put a couple pictures. I'll run over there and look real quick. But I put a couple crude pictures of a design of a plasma engine that you could use, that you would literally pick up your fuel on the way through.
It's like the negatively charged space, so to speak.
Yeah, jump across there. Nope, it's not on that page. Doggone it, where did I put that? Maybe it's on my mad science. Can't remember where I put everything. Yeah, doggone it. There, I'll find it here in a second.
Plasma is like plasma itself comes from the Latin word to mold, right? And like sculpture, and so it molds to its shape just like water. And in some ways, water is plasma. It's just oscillating at a different vibrational frequency. And in plasma, they call the fourth state of matter. But really, matter doesn't really exist. Everything's energy. It's just, you know, matter is a visual way for us to say something is solid or not. But solid, gas, liquid, and then plasma are all considered.
Well, the key to free energy is taking nature out of the balance and grabbing the energy as nature brings it back into balance.
Yeah. Well, I honestly think the key to free energy is that we stop looking at things as with ownership, and we start looking at things like, you know, we all share. You know, we're all a collective. That's the real source of it. And then we can start getting into harnessing and harvesting energies from the universe. Because, you know, our foundation is based upon, you know, a monetary system. I sound like a broken record sometimes, but, you know, that's what the mind does so well. But, you know, our foundation is based upon a monetary system and the idea of separation and competition. And that's not going to get us very far in the long run.
Well, I'm thinking we all going to have to learn how to work together in order to get anything accomplished.
Yeah.
I can't find that picture. I'll just drag one up and throw it in over to Skype to you. That way you can see what it is that I'm talking about. But anyway, it's kind of like how a ramjet works, where it's forcing air down inside there. And, you know, it's pretty neat, though.
Yeah.
But either way, you taking... using inert gas to actually the plasma. The reason why I like the plasma is because you can cram trillions of energy, tons of electrons into one tiny space, as opposed to, you know, letting it go out it somewhere else. Did you see how bright those fluorescent bulb starters got?
Yeah,
and that's massive. That is a lot of power inside there. The mercury arc rectifier, being the very first plasma reactor ever designed, if they knew the potential of that thing back then, we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now.
Yeah. Well, mercury is an interesting element.
Okay, and I'm going to send you a link over, or a picture over Skype, so you can take a look at it. Tell me what you think of this idea here.
I think plasma. What's so fascinating about plasma is, depending on its medium that it's you know, being excited in, it reflects, you know, the transition. You know, it reflects the Townsend cascading, is what kind of plasma is. Negative ions bumping into atomic structures and displacing their negative ions, and then it goes in like a fractal pattern. It just displaces anything in a certain container, like we're talking about.
Well, from my research, what is the big key about the whole deal is when you got it in a vacuum like that. First off, if you look at a regular light bulb, that's a lot of energy going through that tungsten element inside that light bulb. I mean, that little tungsten element is vibrating at such a rapid rate that it's literally creating heat that creates the light that's inside your light bulb. The only thing that keeps that from burning up is that vacuum in that bulb. So if you get a leak in your bulb, then your element, as soon as you turn your light on, will burn up just that quick. And so inside the plasma reactor, when you're hitting those argon gas molecules with high voltage, you're shaking the living crap out of them. And they're separating. You know, the molecules are separating, and it's the nature trying to balance itself back out, putting them back together, that is creating that extra boost that's going on. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And plasma is hot. I mean, it is super hot. I mean, hold your finger on the plasma ball long enough.
What plasma we're talking about? There's cold plasma and there's hot plasma. There's two different types.
Well, I'm talking about the form by which I'm doing.
In a mercury vapor, but in argon, it's actually considered a cold plasma. It's really, I mean, it's still pretty pretty warm, considering.
No, if you hit it with the right frequency, the right voltage. I don't remember if I ever told you about I blew up a tube in my lab. All right, and that tube was screaming hot. It was so hot that it literally had the capability to burn a perfect hole in the side of that tube, perfect round circle, in the side of that tube before it released that energy.
And is that the one? That's the one we were talking about. Is that argon?
Yeah, that's argon.
In the tube? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why I use argon in my plasma reactor, because first off, I can get helium, but I've done some tests with helium, and for some reason helium doesn't seem to be as conductive for some reason. I don't know what the difference.
You look at the you just sent a picture with the argon molecule. Look at the helium molecule. It's very balanced, so it doesn't cascade as well as that argon.
Well, that picture that I showed you is a crude picture of I don't know if you want to call it a ramjet or what, but
ion drive.
Yeah, and if you see where the purple is on there, that's where essentially you have something similar to what your plasma reactor is, or your plasma globe looks like, you know.
Yeah.
And so all you're doing is basically you, as the materials are coming through there, you are basically charging them up. You're have you ever seen whenever they discharge capacitors and they made the little ion motors or whatever, get those things to spin around?
I have one. Are you talking like a Corona motor? Or
yeah, like that.
Yeah, I have a couple videos on that.
So
I've experimented with that.
As you energize any material that goes through there, obviously you're not going to be able to throw a big giant rock down through there, but but dust, you know, there's a lot of dust in space and stuff like that. You use the argon to actually create the plasma field, and then you as you're sucking the debris inside there, it's being charged, and that pressure that comes from the discharge out the other end is what causes you to go. And you can open and close whichever ports you want to go, depending on if you want to go left or right or whatever, up or down.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, like a pressure. I don't even remember what they call it. They're like a pressure. I can't remember what they're called, but NASA uses them to change the orbit of, or change the spin of the space shuttle and stuff like that. Just pressure jets on the side, things like that. But I think that the thing is the bunch of groups have been working on that very idea of the ion drive and stuff like that. But what happens in most cases is that it doesn't get the funding needed.
Well, and that's why I like building little junky prototypes here in my lab, just to know that it'll work, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, you get pressure off of it. You can feel it. If you take your arm and put it on the back of your monitor, you can feel pressure. You know, you can feel the energy sucking your hair up off your arm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is pressure going on there. And so, in space, it don't take a whole lot of pressure to get you moving because there's no gravity up there.
What's the front field of it? That's where it pulls in the...
Yeah.
The vacuum?
Those are like a hood scoop on your car.
Yeah.
And so as you're sucking in, it doesn't matter whether it's hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, because you're not going to be igniting it. All you're doing is energizing it to create a pressure out the back of that deal there.
In order to create a strong pressure to make a jet, it's going to need like a magnetic field, permanent magnet, something like that. But the problem with most permanent magnets is they're not very balanced, but... some type of magnetic field, strong magnetic field presence, and you can really make those. You can make a jet and have it go extremely, extremely fast. So, like on your openings, you know, if you put like a magnetic toroids, you know, some type of toroidal magnetic force.
Yeah.
It'll focalize it even more. Plasma is very, very much affected by magnetic fields.
Well, you can use the materials. There's all kinds of materials with anomalies in there. We were talking about bismuth. You know, bismuth doesn't block out a magnetic field, but it redirects the magnetic field, and the field actually goes around it.
That's a good point. You can use bismuth rings.
Yep, and so you can guide that field to whichever direction that you want it. So even if the magnet is you know, not, how did you say that earlier?
It's not balanced.
You can send that magnetism around, you know, because it's not going to, like I said, the bismuth ain't gonna, it ain't gonna block it, but it will redirect it.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot of heat involved.
Yeah.
So you're not gonna really burn up your thrusters, because it's like a cold, because the energy that you're, the cascading energy, the static. We call it static electricity or turbo electricity or whatever. It's not hot. It's just a force. It's a magnetic force in and of itself, in a sense, trying to refine itself into the through transition into a greater magnetic field.
Well, so that's why I keep saying about this plasma. That's why I'm fascinated with it, because there's a lot going on there, and I keep on saying it because I'm outside the box, but I still say you can get work out of just voltage alone, and it is so easy to create high voltage, and that even that word create right there, I'm going against the scientific grain.
Influence.
Energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
You can bring it into existence.
Yeah.
All right.
I got to see. That's the thing. I got to take my terminology and figure out a way to say things that don't go against the grain. Because
but it's all semantics in the first place. It's all just a bunch of talk. You know, like the idea of perpetual motion and stuff like that. Of course, there's no perpetual motion because nothing lasts forever. So right there, you know, you kind of throw it when you call it perpetual motion
on that subject. On that subject about nothing lasting forever, you know, that's right, I'm sure, because eventually the fuel source has got to run down, but our sun's been up there for a long time, and the average lifespan is, what, 65? If you're lucky, you might live over to be 100 these days. You know, back in the Bible days, they lived to be like 500 and 900 years, but nowadays, with all the crud that we're putting in ourselves, we ain't going to make it. But
what are you talking about? We live longer than we ever have.
Yeah. Well, either way, 65 to 100 years is the average lifespan. So I figure if I start something up when I'm like, say I'm 16 years old, and I start it up, and it runs all the way through my entire life, to me that's perpetual motion. All right.
Exactly.
I don't care if it shuts off when I leave. It's not my problem. So that's what I'm saying.
No, that is exactly my point. Is it's perception? You know, it's the same with a lot of the theory of relativity itself is only relative to perspective, and the perspective is light. So
and time
off of the speed of light is kind of a
time is only relevant to the perception of the observer. If you ain't paying attention to time, you always hear people say, well, man, time flies when you're having fun. Or they're like, wow, how did we get here so fast? It didn't seem like it took us that long, you know? Because they're not paying attention to the time, and it goes by in a blink of an eye. You know, you go to your favorite concert or whatever, you know, the concert's maybe an hour long or something like that, and it seems like you just got there and now you're leaving already, you know?
Yeah.
So time is only relevant to the perception of the observer. And then that's another thing that makes me crazy, because I believe in time travel, and I believe in that alternate dimensions, and, you know, we could go into a big old spew on that.
Well, so do quantum physics, quantum physicists, but the astrophysicists.
But the mainstream science guys, what do they say?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you can't do that. You can't beat the laws.
Some of the big names in mainstream science actually do, you know, they do critical thinking, like Neil deGrasse Tyson and, I can't even remember his name. There's quite a few people who You know, the thing, the true nature of the theoretical scientist is that they are metaphysical, okay? And somehow along the way, a lot of theoretical scientists have fooled themselves into believing that, you know, what they learn is hard science. Like it is what is, but it's not true. It's still theoretical, and it can always be changed. You should always be critically thinking. And metaphysics has somehow taken this new age turn, like metaphysics. So that's new age nonsense. You know, it's hippie stuff. But really, if you look at the definition of metaphysics, and I encourage people to do that. Go look at the definition of metaphysics, and it ties in with theoretical physics. The only difference is one has observation in nature and an applied means after you come up with the theory, and the other is coming up with the theory in the first place. That's what metaphysics is actually coming up with the theory in the first place. So they hold you know. Somehow along the line, there's somebody along the line who made us think about people using their imagination.
Well,
it's killed a lot of science.
In quantum physics, they talk about, like, you know, when you was talking earlier about the Higgs boson, and whenever you get down into inner space and you start looking at everything on the micro level and even deeper than that, then things start to appear and disappear, you know, and there's no scientific explanation for it, and sometimes it depends on who's looking at it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
because we influence it, because our field presence is so great, I mean, and even the sensory machines we make, the fact that we've even made them in the first place puts an influence on them, you know what I mean?
Well,
our influence is quite great.
For those folks out there that don't believe that that even that stuff's possible, everyone out there, when you're walking through, you can always tell if somebody's standing right directly behind you, even though you're not looking at them. You know, you can feel them standing there.
So long as you're aware of your presence,
yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah.
And so there's something going on there. Well, this is why I like to look outside the box, because it ain't no fun inside the box. If 9 times out of 10 you get the same result, you know, boring, but there's one anomaly in that whole deal, and I want to know what caused that anomaly.
Yeah.
You know, there was something going on there.
Yeah, you can't just disregard it. You have to understand that anomaly, that trump card. You have to look at it and see if it really plays effect, if it's really doing, if there's really something happening there, or if you created it, you know, like what's going on there.
So it looks like we got Mitko in here. How you doing, brother? Got your microphone on?
You might be in silence.
Yeah, I'm here.
So I like your picture there, man.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I found it on Facebook.
That's cool. So go ahead.
I've been working a lot with the Tesla crowd lately, and I can't say I discovered a lot of things, but I found some interesting things. Like, at one point, when you tweak the spark gap at the exact place, you can make the whole coil blow.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, because you're ionizing all that air that's right around the doggone coil, man.
Yeah,
Coltis got his to such an extreme that he started getting breakout down the side of the coil, and it was pretty doggone impressive. I don't know which video it was. I'll have to look back, but the energy that was released off of that coil was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, my coil burned through 1.5 centimeters of PVC.
Wow. Now that's good.
With a 5 centimeters of air gap.
Yeah, well, it breaks through the air pretty easily. It's not air; it becomes conductive. So
yeah. Then,
well, why does that air become conductive? See, there's the key right there. Your plasma.
Plasma is the most conductive thing in the universe. And look at its transitional state; it transitions into pretty much whatever you want it to transition into. In a sense, it's amazing.
And what color is lightning?
Blue.
Depends on what gas it's going through.
Yep, that's true. That's
yeah.
True too.
Pretty cool, man. But yep. Also in the hottest spots of lightning, it's white.
Yeah.
So if you get a white spark coming off of your Tesla coil on your spark gap, then you're going to know you got that sucker tuned. If you look at my latest video that I just did, and you see where I finally got that one set down just right, you can see that spark gap is just glowing white.
Yeah.
That's a lot of energy, man.
Yep.
So, anyway, that's the reason why, you know, I keep saying is I like plasma, because, you know, all you got to do is energize those molecules and you're tapping in to the energy that's all around you.
Yeah, you've excited the medium of which the electrons.
Yeah, because whatever passes through that field, I mean, it just starts beating itself to death, you know. You know, look at a microwave, you know, when you're sending those really short, super fast microwaves into, you know, basically a square box, you know, that those microwaves are bombarding the water molecules, which is a dipole molecule, and has a north and a south, so as that field is, you know, the waves and the dips are going up and down through that molecule, it's causing them water molecules to literally rock back and forth so fast that they're literally creating heat, which is creating friction. And if you can create friction in water to make it heat, that's pretty doggone impressive. You know, because normally you can jump in the water. You can boil water, you don't want to jump in it, but you know, it's because all the molecules are in there beating around, and it's not
the
good.
The interesting thing about a microwave is it's like it has a large carrier wave. Like it has tons of tiny microwave oscillations in a very large waveform that kind of, you know, bounces around on itself. It's kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot of amperage in.
Yeah, and actually, the microwave box is resonant to the frequency.
Yeah. Size of it, usually,
yeah. Yep, and for those folks that are scared of microwaves, if you're standing right next to it, you're obviously in trouble, but I have had a microwave completely out of its entire case. And of course, because of what I was told ahead of time, I was like way across the other side of the room, ducking down underneath the bench to look at the reaction as I'm firing this thing up. So I was remotely doing it. But then after I got to seeing, hey, there ain't no danger. I had the microwave in that deal was only traveling out at maximum 3 or 4 inches out of the end of that antenna. And so, you know, anything that was right directly in front of it would get hot. You move it 4 feet or, you know, 7, 8 inches away or even further than that, you're not even hitting the water molecules fast enough to do anything. So those microwaves coming out of the antenna were weak. I mean, and they're not disappearing, but, you know, so they're still bouncing around out there, but they're not bouncing around at such a rapid rate. I didn't boil my face off. You know, I'm 3/4 water. So if I'm standing right next to it and I'm firing this thing up and my hair's not frying and I'm not catching on fire or catching a suntan, then I know that those waves coming out aren't coming out strong enough to actually do any damage unless you're right directly in front of that thing.
If you turn on a microwave with nothing in it, is that what you were doing?
No, I had the microwave completely out of the case.
Was there anything?
Only the magnetron standing outside.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Just the magnetron outside. And so I was running some experiments to energize like fluorescent bulbs and argon and different stuff like that to see the reactions, which ones were getting the best reactions, and even boiled water, you know, with it outside
of
the case.
Yeah, I've been doing the same thing with a microwave.
But I didn't get fried, you know, that's the key. Now, if you amp that thing up to where you can make that a lot more powerful, you know, it's kind of like a CB radio. You got some radios that will only go like a quarter mile. It's not putting out enough energy to send a strong enough wave to get that far. But if
antenna's important.
Yeah. And because of the way this particular microwave magnetrons are designed, they're not really, those microwaves aren't really going out, you know, dangerously past 3 or 4 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually a magnetron is just like a vacuum tube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has a little disc in there with little tiny holes in there that whenever the heat off the element releases electrons, and the magnetic field on one side sends them off in the opposite direction, and the magnetic field on the other side, because if you look on a magnetron, there's two magnets. There's one in front, one in back. And so whenever that magnetic field guides those electrons through out the other side and comes out the antenna on as a microwave. But as the electrons are being released, they're going into that little disc and getting caught up in one of them little holes and causing it to spin yet even faster. And then by the time it goes out the antenna, you got a short, fast wave, which we call microwaves.
Right. On a long wave.
Yeah.
Like it's a tiny little oscillation on a long wave.
But if you want to make a microwave gun to fry your, you know, like if you go deer hunting with a huge microwave gun, you can cook it while you...
you need a big power source and a big antenna.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. But
that would be very useful.
Yeah. So, but...
You'd have to drive your gun.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be a heavy one with a lot of power supply.
Yeah.
So, you know, just that little example, you know, that's microwave ovens are some space-age technology, but the people out there, they make all this technology seem dangerous, you know. I've been working in my lab with all these frequencies and everything, and I ain't fried myself out yet, you know. I've been doing this for years. And I'm still fine, but you know, I was told, oh, you got to watch out for X-rays, you got to watch out for radiation, everything else like that. You know, I'm getting a little thin on the top from old age, but my hair's not falling out. I'm not dying of leukemia or cancer or anything like that. But all the technology out there that we have access to, we're not using because people's afraid of it. You know,
like some of it, yeah.
Nuclear. You know. I would redesign the whole nuclear reactor to where you wouldn't have that problem. And why waste that energy whenever you got spent fuel rods? They're still releasing energy because that's still releasing energy.
They don't waste them. They re-enrich them and make nuclear weapons with them.
Well,
that's why we use uranium, is because we can get nuclear weapons out of it. You've heard of thorium, right?
Yeah.
Been around since the 70s, man. I mean, the saltwater reactors have been around for a long time, and we're not using them. And you got to question why. Well, why is that? And it comes back down to the idea of control of resource and all that kind of stuff.
I guess that's what I was trying to get at with all that stuff that I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the oil. You know, we know we can burn water. All right, people. Look at you cross-eyed every time you say, oh, you know, you can run your car on water. No, you can't. You can't get enough of it. It takes too much energy to get the... That's because you're using it wrong. You know?
You're trying to be forceful with it instead of encouraging it.
Yeah. So, the Earth is 3/4 covered in water. And the best thing about burning hydrogen is once you burn the hydrogen, guess what you get for exhaust? Water!
Water. Recondenses.
So if you're burning water and you're getting water out the other side, that seemed to me like it'd be the perfect fuel.
Yeah.
So what if you made a generator that would run off of water, and while it's running off of water, you know, you could turn a huge high voltage generator head. Then you shot that high voltage energy into a plasma reactor, and you amplify that energy, creating a massive amount of pressure, and then use that massive amount of pressure to run your electric motors from then on out, and your light bulbs.
Yeah. Well, or you could even just put it into the earth, like Tesla was trying to do, right? And store the energy in the battery that is the earth, you know, the magnetic field of the earth.
Yeah.
It's already there.
Because nature's going to balance itself out. You're not going to hurt anything.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's a far better way of transmitting power because you're not forcing it. It's just there. You know, you can't. Have you ever heard of anybody besides getting hit by lightning? Have you ever heard of anybody getting electrocuted by walking on the ground?
Nope.
I mean, unless they're barefoot and they walk through a puddle of water and there's an actual wire on, you know,
Well, I know that electrons travel through the dirt. I know that electrons can be baited out of the earth, and anybody who's ever played a guitar on a concrete floor barefooted will know that as soon as you put your arm down on the pickups and over the strings, you get the living crud shocked out of your soul.
Get some tingles.
So, you know, hey, it's all basic science, man, and we're going to have to keep on doing it ourselves because we're not going to get anybody else to agree with us. You know, I think that's why my thumbs downer comes around to hassle me every once in a while. I got to be getting on somebody's nerves. Why would anybody take the time to try to shut me up if I wasn't
I don't think it's trying to shut you up. I think it's just somebody who's just disgruntled or doesn't believe in what you're saying, and so they instead of
well, it's not just the thumbs downer. It's the attacks on my server, the attacks on the doggone the virtual servers and my broadcast and stuff like that. Since we've been on this radio show talking about all this stuff, I've had at least 3 intrusion attempts on my doggone computer.
Yeah.
So I know that somebody out there don't like me saying this kind of stuff. You know, it's kind of like, you know, that one bad apple. We got to shut him up.
Yeah,
but you have to look at them just like trolls.
Yeah. Well, trolls are obnoxious.
Oh, they're just entertaining themselves through, you know, it's like the bullying school. It's the same thing, you know. It's something that I have a problem with themselves. It's not they have a problem with you. They have a problem with themselves, but they use you as their outlet to express that problem or manifest that problem.
Well, my
ego, man. Look at it. Jesus said it. Buddha said it. I mean, so many people, so many amazing figures, spiritual leaders, and people who have looked inwardly, deeply, have recognized that the ego, our minds, what we think, our mental talk is what is stopping us from doing amazing things and progressing the unrecognition that we are all connected in all ways, you know.
Well,
every action we have.
I just wish that they would open a dialogue by typing something in there, you know, and
yeah,
just saying.
That'd be constructive.
Yeah, just saying.
Be a constructive force.
Even in destruction,
there is some type of construction. Like, for example, it makes you wonder why somebody puts the thumbs down, and then you're like, oh well. You know, maybe they feel this way, maybe they feel that way. It affects you still, but it has a constructive outcome in the long run. It's just hard to see right up front. You know what I mean?
How long would it take for a simple explanation? I think you're stupid because second law of thermodynamics or this or that or whatever. You know?
Yeah, the classic rhetoric is usually the case. Right?
Yeah,
somebody else has said, repeating what somebody else has said.
But, you know, while they're standing there telling me why it's not possible, it's funny because my friend came over one time, and he's mathematical whiz of epic proportions, and he's always telling me, oh, the math don't work. That's against this law of physics. That's against that law of physics. It won't work. And so he came over one time, and I showed him that one deal where I made a video about how I plugged my battery charger right straight into the dirt off of one leg off of the plug. And his jaw hit the floor. He said, that's not possible. It's not working. It's you know, and he left up out of here believing that it's not possible. He saw it.
But awareness, you know, it takes some time for some people to relearn things. I have a neighbor who works at Tektronix, you know, works at a big company that deals with circuitry and he's an electrical engineer, and he comes over and sees his Tesla coil with the plasma glove experiment, and like, you know, first of all he looks at the transformer, he's like, oh, that's not right, because I only have it off of one leg of the transformer.
Yep.
Right? And I'm like, well, I'm just grounding it out to the earth. It's like, oh, but you have to have it on both, because otherwise it won't, you know, it won't work off the parasitic transformation in the ferrite. I'm like, well, no, I mean, if you looked at Tesla's wireless or one wire transmissions, you don't need both legs. The transmission is actually just going through one line, and all I'm doing is instead of giving it back to the power grid, I'm giving it to the earth. That's all I'm doing. He's like, oh well, that doesn't that doesn't work, Mom. And then I turn it on, I'm like, well, it's working, so I don't know what to tell you. And then I show him the plasma globe and how it discharges for the entire time that we're talking afterwards. It's still sitting there discharging, and he's just like in disbelief. He's like, I don't understand how that works. Like, I told
an electrician.
My dad make a Tesla coil when I was younger, and and he's also asking me about my primary coil wrapping. He's like, wow, you can wrap it, outward like that, like a pancake. I'm like, yeah, you could wrap it. I mean, the magnetic field it creates is three dimensional. It's not. It doesn't just go around the wire. It actually creates an entire magnetic field around the whole thing and kind of expands and collapses like a bubble. And I don't know. There's a bunch of things that he's been taught that I just one little visit. He was like, oh, that's so interesting. You know, it's so interesting.
Well, I think this is amazing because there was a electrician guy over. I'm echoing back again. Yikes!
Yeah, you're kind of dropping out a little too.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Breaker 19 for Radio Chick. Anyway, this electrician guy was over one time, and we were talking about Tesla and stuff like that and baiting electrons out of the earth, and he said, oh, you can't do that. And I said, well, you know, you should know because you're an electrician that you can take one wire and plug it into one of the sides of your outlet, and then you can take the other wire and plug it right into the ground, which goes down to the dirt, and that light bulb will still light up. Why is that? And he couldn't tell me.
Because alternating currents are in two places at once, in a sense. Like, you're getting electrons from the earth. That's the easy explanation.
So, you know, the only reason why that ground is there is supposedly for a safety, but anybody who's ever had the crap shocked out of while working on electricity knows that ground really didn't do them a whole lot of good. But for the most part, it's to redirect it in case those two wires happen to burn and make contact with each other, that it'll feed that energy down into the ground and kick your breaker off when the breaker gets to too high of amperage. So, with that said, Tesla showed about baiting electrons out of the earth, and you try to tell people about that, you know, they think you're freaking nuts, but you show them, I plugged it in this side of the socket, now I'm going to plug it right into the ground. This should pop the breaker, but it don't.
Yeah, because it has a natural, actually, it's completely the opposite, because the reason why I have my NST rounded off the primary is because if I feed it back into the system, it trips my breaker, because I'm pumping thousands of volts in, thousands upon thousands of volts back into the system.
Yeah.
And my system can't handle it, so it pops the breaker. So.
Well, I use a 12-volt Beckett oil burner igniter for my experiments, and I'm only running off of one leg. The rest of the power comes from the dirt. So whenever I fire my coils up, I got one side plugged into the ground and the other side plugged into the Tesla coil, and I'm sending out just the energy that I want to use. If I want to do the whole breakout thing to get lightning in there, you would freak. You wouldn't want to come in my lab because there'd be lightning bolts in all different directions. And so I figured out real early that I needed to use a really super thin wire so that I'm not letting a whole lot of electron flow come up out of the earth. Otherwise, I'd catch a lightning bolt to the face, and I don't know if, I speak for myself, but I don't think it's a very wise idea to take a lightning bolt to the face.
It depends on how many joules that lightning bolt contains.
Hey, it'll light your joules up, I'm telling you. But yeah. I'm doing I've been doing this for a long time, and I don't know, if you go back and watch all my older videos and you see how thin it was up on my workbench, now I keep cramming in another coil and then another coil and then another coil, and I keep on adding to the system, and I can keep on adding to the system. If I had a lab 40 miles in diameter or whatever, I could keep on adding to that system. Just keep cramming more in there because I'm not changing anything. I'm not putting any kind of resistance. All I'm doing is directing that energy around a bunch of coils of wire. That's it. And creating a field. Yeah.
I'm sure you have experimented with Tesla's hairpin circuit.
Yeah.
You've tried lighting up a light bulb with super thin wires.
Well, I was thinking along the same lines of that as, but I was wanting to rewind an entire electric motor with really super fine wire to try to get that to run an electric motor. You know, like a high voltage secondary would be on one of your flyback transformers or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that would be pretty complicated.
Yeah,
yeah, it'd take a while.
Magnetic field strength supposedly wouldn't be enough, is the idea behind the, you know, the thinner wire making a higher potential difference, but lowers the magnetic field strength.
Well, all I can say is you have to try it before you deny it and see if it works.
That's I'm just saying what the standard principle would be.
Oh, yeah, if it was standard. If we go by the mainstream science and mainstream physics, then we ain't going to get nothing done. We're all nuts.
I agree.
But
it's already been said and done. What's the point of doing anything?
But you
don't explore what life has to offer, okay? Because that's not what we do.
You've discovered an anomaly in your video that you've been doing some videos on, you know, using that plasma ball, and then after you shut the main power off, that you're still getting a lot of energy going there, enough to ignite that plasma. And that's a whole lot more impressive than you think, man. That's why I like that video.
I'm trying to work the bug. Like, I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong, right? I'm trying to be skeptical about it. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but at the same time, like, I noticed different effects. Like, the video I just posted now just has the straight plasma ball into the ground, and the effect is completely different. It has a discharge at a much higher rate. It acts as like a capacitor even more. But that one particular wrapping I have, the double grounds like that, is just, it's hard to explain. I can't quite explain it. And what's sad is I can't get a really nice video on it. So people can really see it. And the more that I've been using it, the stronger the effect is becoming, which is even stranger. Like the gases in it are accepting the electrons much easier, and there's actually a luminescence in it before the plasma fractals or streamers, whatever you want to call them, before they discharge. There's actually a luminescence to it inside of it, as well as outside of it, and just all kinds of strange phenomenon. And my thinking behind doing it originally, I didn't think it would work. You know, I guess I'm always skeptical about that stuff. And the fact that it did kind of work means that I'm going to start experimenting with it even more, as far as that outer perimeter wrapping, that coupling, the magnetic coupling on the outside.
Well, capacitors are amazing things. You can use capacitors for timers. You know, normally you use like a transistor that when the voltage gets up to a certain height, it'll turn certain things on at a certain time. You can you can use a capacitor to do the exact same thing. Like a small capacitor is obviously going to charge up faster than a larger capacitor, and it's going to discharge faster.
Yeah.
So in some of my circuits that you've seen, like the one you was talking about, the homing beacon.
Yeah. Circuit.
How I use that to time things out by the different sizes of the capacitors. There's really tiny ones in there, and there's larger ones in there, and I can turn certain things on and off at different times by the size of that capacitor, because it's going to obviously discharge faster on a littler one than it will a big one. So I love capacitors, and if you wanted to use it in Tesla coils to get the right timing on something, you could use a smaller capacitor to make it jump that gap faster. You know, like they use rotary spark gaps and stuff to try to get that field to collapse and come back on real fast. You know,
right.
Kind of like flipping your light switch off and on real quick.
Yeah,
you can do the same thing with capacitors. And you can do it with adjustable spark gaps, and you can do it with the argon gas filled bulbs.
See, that's another thing is I'd like to try to do kind of like experiment some of the experiments that you did with the plasma reactor and stuff, and try looping it back through, feeding it back through the Tesla coil and stuff. And in a way, I do with this discharging, but it's not quite the same. But everything technically is. It has a capacitance. I mean, everything. It has a magnetic field that has a capacitance. Some things have of far less capacitance than others. And
do you want to know why I use them doggone fluorescent bulb starters in my spark gaps on my system?
Because they have plasma capacitance.
Well, that, and it's a switch.
Yeah.
Inside there, you can literally watch this. When the plasma gets built up to such a state, before it blows the tube up, that little deal inside there will break the circuit. It'll heat up. It turns on and off. And so, if you watch those videos, you'll notice that those plasma in the little bulb starters, they'll blink on and off. You're getting a pulse and not a steady surge. If I left those with just the argon gas where they wouldn't shut themselves off, they'd pop just like that tube.
Yeah.
And so for safety purposes, I want it to shut itself off and on like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Because that's why I like the spark gaps a lot. Yeah, it's a really good idea.
Because once again, we're back to a lightning bolt to the face. Or worse.
it'll burn a little bit. Good plasma burn.
But if I'm getting this doggone much energy off the negative post of my battery and the dirt itself, so I'm running off the negative portion of the battery and down into the dirt, and you're seeing that much plasma build up in there, there's something to it.
Yeah, well, when you just plug the plasma ball into the ground and you put it in a near field of the Tesla coil, it lights up.
Yeah.
So that's basically what you're doing, except your Tesla coil is a far better receiver.
You're creating a circuit. You're closing the circuit when you do that.
Yep.
And that energy going out there, it's looking for something to grab onto, you know?
And well, that's the idea of the magnetic field presence, is that it is of a giant circuit of balancing, like you're saying, like nature naturally balances itself. That's the magnetic field. It's a balance.
A beautiful balance. By me making the Tesla coil with a coil within a coil, I am using the whole boy on a swing kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that when one field is pulsing, it's punching the other one, and the power just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the reason why I even running it on the way that I run it in that video. That video was simply to test the spark gap. It wasn't for... If I fired this thing up like your traditional Tesla coil, I'd be afraid of it, literally. Because it will keep on building strength up, because every time one field collapsed, another one's already firing up again. They keep punching each other up, and that's how a Tesla coil works with the big old pancake primary coil. When you send that energy up, it energizes the secondary, and as the field is collapsing, by the time the field gets ready to collapse, the capacitor bank's already recharged again and basically punches it again. It's like driving your car at 50 miles an hour and having somebody come up and cram you in the back of the car doing 100 miles an hour. You get that extra boost. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot of energy going on.
You're basically swinging at a much faster pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the faster you can get that field... the faster you can get that field to collapse, and then the faster you can punch it back up at the same time, before the field even gets a chance to lose all its energy, you've done smacked it again, and that's how you're getting all that really nifty corona out of the top of your top load there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff, man.
Yeah, that's an excellent design. I really like that coil, definitely. It's going to be cool. I actually wish you'd take it outside just to see how much voltage you can push out of it. I'm just fearful that you break down the insulated material between the capacitors and the other.
Well, controller. I think I could literally catch it on fire. I think that if I put this thing outside, I'd have to put it out far enough away from the house and away from any power lines, because it would punch up a good enough field that I can literally drag, ionize all the air in between the ground and the sky, and literally drag down a lightning bolt. I'm 100% positive of that.
Wow. That's a pretty powerful little coil, then.
Yeah, it is. I got one that I call Fat Boy that I don't run, and I remember the first time I run that dang thing, with full power to it, man, that thing literally damn near killed me.
Did it hit you?
Yeah, it shot an arc about 2-3 feet across the damn room and zapped me in my arm, boy, and I talk about it going down, boy.
Did it give you a little scar, a little singe?
Yeah, I got a little bit of a burn out the deal, but I was right next to the... had one hand on the switch when I did it, and so as soon as that sucker lit me up, I flipped that switch off.
Hey, shit. Was it remote? It wasn't remote, huh?
No, it wasn't remote. I was on the other side of my bench. And I punched it up with full power just to see, you know, what it would do. And when it did, it laid me out, man. If I hadn't had enough brains in my head to keep my hand on that doggone... I got a switch. I use it like an ink pen for an insulator because I won't even touch the switch itself.
Yeah.
Because once I fire that sucker up, man, it sends juice through that switch and it'll light you up. So I put a plastic ink pen on there so that I can use it as a switch, and I had my hand on it, and as soon as that thing hit me, I flipped that sucker off, man. Tell you what.
You should set up a nice ground rail. That way that doesn't happen.
Yeah. But that Fat Boy is made just about the same way as this one here, but this one here is a little bit more updated. It's a better version, and it's got more capacitors inside of it than the other one did.
But it's like a double coil, same
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, it's a coil within a coil. Yeah.
So is it three coils? Is there three inductors? Or
well, you got the primary on the outside, and you got the top load, and actually this thing doesn't have the actual primary. It would be like a pancake coil on the outside of it, or even it doesn't even have to be a pancake. It could be a coil, a cone shape. But either way, so what you got is two secondaries going on and two top loads and two capacitor layers.
And so the top load itself is a capacitor too.
So I'm using a big old fat piece of PVC. And underneath the secondary is a capacitor layer. And then that capacitor layer has a wire that shoots up to the top load, just like on a regular Tesla coil. You know, where at the end of your Tesla coil goes up to the top load on the secondary.
Yeah.
And on the inside is identical, but instead of using the multi-strand or the strands like you see on the outside, on the inside I'm using big old heavy gauge aluminum wire like you'd run inside for your house from the pole outside to your breaker box.
Yeah.
Now it's really tricky to try to wind that tight enough to get it up inside that tube, but
yeah.
Once you do that, first off, that aluminum picks up radiant energy so good. It's just it's incredible. And so, even running it as weak as it was, I still wouldn't touch those wires. Because that's how much energy is coming off of that. And you could see, as I'm running that deal, how strong that field was. You know, and that's running on low power because it's just off the negative side of the battery and on the dirt itself. And so, all the energy wasn't being sent out like your average Tesla coil, it was being directed right into the dirt, and that's why I kept holding the voltmeter up there to show you how the voltage in the ground at one point, it was like 1,662 volts or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but it was over 1,000 volts of electricity that was in the dirt.
Yeah, receiving.
Yeah.
From your mains, yeah.
So I'm sending all that energy down into the dirt as opposed to like I've been doing with the rest of them is dragging just a little bit of electrons up to, you know, to energize the thing. This time it's going straight down into the dirt. And you could see on those that dual spark gap there, you could see the purple, the brilliant purple in that plasma.
Yeah.
And
another experiment like I like to do plasma ball type of thing is set up another Tesla coil where it's a bipolar Tesla coil, you know, where it just has a primary in the center.
Yeah.
That way I don't have to tune it so high, because right now I'm tuning it high enough to where the voltage is high enough to really affect the plasma globe, because if I keep it low and just make a nice steady magnetic field, you know, where I can light things up around it in the near field and stuff, it doesn't have the same effect on the plasma. It's like imbalanced imbalanced in ground, I guess, is kind of what it is. So it's cool, like it's, you kind of can see it, but it's actually coming from the ground in a sense, and not from the Tesla coil.
Well, I had one of my coils fired up, and just using a fluorescent bulb, energized the gas inside that bulb good enough that whenever I reached over to put my thumb on the end like I usually do for the ground on that bulb, you know, it shocked the crap out of me. It put a little pinhole burn on the end of my finger.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of voltage you're putting out.
Yeah. That's why I keep saying, man.
My coil's not that. No, I'm only running off of 5 kilovolts. That's my power in.
So. Oh, well, I got a 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter going on. So I'm running 20K through just that one plasma ball. Has got 20K running through it.
And then you have a bunch of capacitors building it up even more.
And so if I made a massive capacitor bank, like especially these new super caps that they got, the ones they call boost caps.
Yeah.
If I put a massive capacitor bank with those on there, man, it would get dangerous in here.
Yeah, that is very dangerous. But those are super expensive too. I bought some of those, and not the boost caps one, but the D cell emulated capacitors, and they're expensive, dude. They're ridiculously expensive.
Well, that's why those ones that you built, the Leyden jar style that you built, and the ones that I've been building, I mean, you can build really, really powerful capacitors. You don't need the super caps, but I mean, it'd be nice to have them.
Yeah.
But you don't
discharge a lot of joules. It'd be slow down. Like you were talking about earlier, the whole, if you have a capacitor that can take high voltage but has a very small capacitance, you can kind of regulate the pulsation, right? And that's another part of tuning a Tesla coil. Well, that's what's nice about the Leyden jar capacitors is they're like still in the nanofarad. I'm not even sure if they reach picofarad, but it's useful in transmission.
Well, on my Shaziz coil, I've got an 800 microfarad capacitor. And when that thing runs long for a while and charges that capacitor up, when you discharge that, I literally welded my screwdriver. I mean, it made such a loud boom in there, it sounded like a shotgun going off.
Yeah, I bet.
Cool stuff, man.
Yeah. I wish I had a capacitor. I have some old oil capacitors, but they're only like 1,200, you know. They're not. They wouldn't deal with it, so...
Yeah.
Well, like 8 microfarad, 1,200 volts, so...
Looks like we're getting down to the wire here. My wife should be showing up anytime soon for her deal, man. You should give everybody your website or your YouTube channel. That way they can go over and take a look at that plasma globe thing that you've been working on. That's pretty cool.
All right. It's just go to YouTube and type in my name. My name is spelled D-I-A-D-O-N. And I should pop up there.
Yeah. Well,
died in A.
Mitko, do you got a YouTube channel?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel.
Well, give everybody a YouTube deal.
Okay, just a minute. I'm going to throw a link in the because it's not a. The letters are not English, so it's pretty complicated.
Cool. I will post the link inside the Shaziz chat room there, or if you're already in there, you can do that. Just post it in the Shaziz chat room there.
Yeah, I can do that too.
Yeah. Anyway, that's some fascinating work that you're doing on there. Keep up that work. I want to do some of that myself now that I saw you doing it.
Hey, well, I'm inspired by you, and I'm just learning from a bunch of other people. It's not like it's all my ideas. A lot of ideas built upon ideas of people who I don't even know's name, you know.
And that's what makes all this stuff work, man, is finding those anomalies from all the different alternative researchers. You know, all we're doing is sharing ideas, which is good, and you put those pieces of the puzzle together, and that's how we're going to find the holy grail of electricity. See, the deal is, everybody's looking to, I want something I can plug into my house and just run it as is, you know. If that was that easy to do, we'd have done did it, you know. It's just talking about modifying your existing equipment to run off a different type of energy, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, talk about putting a plasma reactor in somebody's yard to run their house. Everybody, when they hear the word reactor, the first thing they think is nuclear.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what a world.
Yep.
So, I don't see my wife yet. She's got, we got still 5 minutes left.
I don't.
Yeah.
This is your channel?
Yeah, is it not right?
No, no, nothing. Because I just put a link in there.
Radio silence.
No, just we're doubling. We're doubling the links.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, if you get jump over there to shazizradio.com and look in the chat room, they got the links to their YouTube there. You can go over there and subscribe and keep an eye on their progress on their experiments and stuff. But you know, I got a new video up there. I ain't put a whole lot of videos out recently. I've had a whole lot of stuff going on, and a visitor from Australia, and looking forward to seeing him again. We did couple things. We blew some things up over here, messing around with some hydrogen, showing how powerful it was. But we actually had a lot of fun. So, hey, maybe sometime you guys can get over here or something like that. We can blow some stuff up together.
That'd be awesome. It'd be fun to spitball ideas and brainstorm, play around.
It's not a mad science lab unless you have an explosion once or twice. My wife's always continuously coming out here shaking her head whenever there's either something smoking or something blew up. Or
yeah, she's about turned up. The same thing. She comes out and sees some of the things I'm doing, and she's like, oh my goodness, when are we going to burn the house down?
Alrighty, well, we're down to the last few minutes. You guys got any last words you want to say to anybody? No? Yeah? No?
Yeah, sure, I will. Question. Use questions. Use critical thinking. Don't just, you know, and also intuition. Use what's inside of you. Don't just get stuck on what everybody else is saying, because that's not how things progress. You know, the flock of birds, they don't all just listen to what one bird is saying. They all say something, and they all go to where that bird is saying, hey, let's go this way.
Well, you know how it is for me, man. When they say it can't be done, I'm going to try it. All right, well, that said... I'm going to go ahead and place. Go ahead, Mikko.
Yeah, just always think outside the box. And if someone says it's impossible, prove it's possible.
Yep, yeah. I agree. Well, been a great show, guys. Been a lot of fun. We'll catch you guys if you guys are around for the Knights of the Roundtable tomorrow. Everybody out there, stay tuned for Beverly's Hope Show. I'm going to play us up out of here with a quick tune. And with that said, peace and love. Take care.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street. singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, children.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.